Support for TPR comes from UT San Antonio, offering degree programs and research focused on workforce development, student success, and health innovation across Texas. UTSA.edu. UT San Antonio, the University of Ambition.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Lone Star Beer has long been more than just a beer. For generations, it's been part of the image of Texas, the image that Texas projects to the world. It's a symbol of honky-tonks and barbecue, floating down the river and the tubes and country music, punk music, and a carefully cultivated sense of Texas swagger. But the history of Lone Star Beer is more complicated than the familiar label suggests. It begins with one Texas brewery founded along the San Antonio River in 1884, and then it shifts to a different company that revived the Lone Star brand and reintroduced the beer brand in 1940. Along the way, the story includes German immigrants, Prohibition, Pancho Villa, fierce competition with Pearl, and some of the most memorable advertising in Texas history. Jeremy Banas tells the story in his brand new book, Lone Star Beer, A History of Two Iconic San Antonio Breweries. Banas is a longtime beer writer and a historian whose previous books have explored the histories of Pearl Beer, San Antonio Brewing, and Celis Beer. Jeremy Banas, welcome to The Source.
Thank you, David.
How did Lone Star Beer become such an icon?
That's kind of a complicated answer in a way, with many thinking that the Lone Star brand we know today really began in the 1880s. But I'd say much of what we know or envision when we think Lone Star beer really came about in the early 70s with Jerry Retzloff, one of the sales reps, and Barry Sullivan, the advertising manager, intentionally creating that connection you mentioned a moment ago between the burgeoning Texas country music scene, punk and so forth in the Austin area, and tying that into a good time with Lone Star Cowboys, bringing in Willie Nelson and the like. So I think much of what we know or what we think we know kind of resulted from that.
Phone lines are open. Love to hear listeners' stories, memories, comments about Lone Star Beer, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Is it your brand? Was it your brand? What does Lone Star Beer say to you? So what was the first origin? What was the original Lone Star Beer that was founded here in San Antonio, 1884?
That's right. It was started by Adolphus Bush with several other local San Antonio businessmen looking to create the largest, most mechanized modern brewery in the state of Texas. And they came with and started the Lone Star Brewing Association, but we're also known as the Lone Star Brewing Company.
And so that's part of San Antonio's German heritage?
Yes. With Adolphus Busch and a couple of the partners, they were indeed German immigrants.
And so how did beer gardens, saloons, and neighborhood breweries contribute to the city's social and political life and making San Antonio, you know, a hub for that?
Well, Pearl had, in some regards, just started that the year before when they were starting to change from having formed the City Brewery to what was the San Antonio Brewing Association. But Lone Star came about around that time, and everybody was excited. You have this new, very large brewery, very modern, putting out a lot of really good beer. You know, the Lone Star beer we know now is a German light lager. The original Lone Star Brewing Association was brewing multiple different styles of beer, and so that got the city excited. It got the bars excited, and everybody felt a sense of community from that shared product.
And was it a strong brand? I mean, would cowboys drink Lone Star beer?
Oh, yes, definitely. Now, the image, again, we have now that the second Lone Star that really formed came about more in the 1970s. That was not that type of a thing for the first Lone Star back then. But, yes, definitely, everybody was drinking it.
And so was it exported? I mean, the early beer the first brand of Lone Star, was that just a hyper local product, or was it sent out over the state?
It was sent out over the state, a little bit in surrounding states, mainly stayed in Texas at that time.
And what was the attraction for San Antonio? Why center it here?
We had at that particular time really just one main brewery since 1859, and that was the Western Brewery that was built on the grounds where the Manger Hotel is, and then later moved underground the Manger Hotel. The gentleman that was the head brewer, Charles Deacon, continued that from 1879 up to the early 19-teens before Prohibition, but he was the only game in town up until the Lone Star Brewing Association opened in 1884, and that was with kind of the advent of more beer coming in with rails hitting San Antonio. And San Antonio started seeing more and more people from around the country and became kind of a hub. The hotel, you know, the Manger Hotel housed many in the Army and those coming through from other parts of the country, just kind of creating a large contribution to the economy.
So in the 1840s with that Lone Star, was it shipped in bottles, all kegs? How was it distributed?
Both bottles and kegs. So kegs first, bottles a little bit later.
So with technological developments, with mechanical refrigeration, bottling, railroad shipping, did that make things like Lone Star and Pearl better economic investments?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the beer is obviously better preserved. You've got refrigerated rail cars transporting a lot of this, getting it to where it needs to go. And then once it's, you know, let's say at a retail outlet or a bar, then they're able to refrigerate it. So it helps keep the product consistent as well for any of the breweries.
So I know that the San Antonio Museum of Art on Jones Avenue, that was a Lone Star brewery. So when was that the brewery?
1884 to 1919. So the San Antonio Museum of Art building is the original Lone Star Brewing Association building. And they've done a great job of, you know, when they redesigned everything and kind of refitted everything in the early 1980s and keeping the history of that building and their brewing history as a part of it.
And the one on Mission Street, which is now not redeveloped, we always hear plans to turn that into the next Pearl. And that was from the resurgence of Lone Star in 1940?
That's correct. Yeah, that's the second iteration of the name Lone Star Brewing.
All right, let's go to a caller, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Love to hear your stories about Lone Star. Let's go to Andy.
Yeah, something told about a year and a half ago, I was living in the Philippines. And some time ago, Asia Brewery Company, under license from Lone Star, made Lone Star beer in the Philippines. So bottles and everything looked just the same. Being from Texas, it was nice to have something from home back in those days.
How's it taste?
It wasn't the same. It wasn't the same, but the bottles look the same.
That's part of it, though. Thank you, Andy, for that. Appreciate you bringing that up. So what about the taste? You know, the Jeremy Bannist, how has the taste changed over the years?
It has been tweaked a little bit here and there, basically unintentionally. When the brewery closed down right after Stroh's had bought it in 1996, then UEC, them contract brewing it here in Texas, but outside of San Antonio. They're having to mimic the water profile and exact brewing process of Lone Star. And when Pabst took over in 98 and had Miller up in Fort Worth contract brew it, they're going off of multiple different beers they're contract brewing and labeling bottles of. And sometimes beers come out very similar, and it's not necessarily the same recipe. But since they have switched, since the second Lone Star, this current one, has switched to Anheuser-Busch in Houston contract brewing all the Lone Star for them, they have really kind of dialed it back into what it originally was. But when you translate that to the second brewery that they opened in Oklahoma City decades ago, as well as what the gentleman mentioned regarding it being available in the Philippines, and it was also available in Japan and so forth, you're getting breweries there that are maybe contract brewing for them, and they're doing their best to, again, mimic the water profile and get the process down. So there can be variances.
Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Right now here on The Source, we are talking about the history of Lone Star Beer and how it's linked with the history of San Antonio with Jeremy Banas. He has a new book out, Lone Star Beer, A History of Two Iconic San Antonio Breweries. Jeremy, how intense was the rivalry between Lone Star and Pearl?
It was pretty intense. Sometimes it was subtle jabs in ad campaigns, or much like with sports teams, fans of one beer versus fans of the other. There were several years where Lone Star was outselling Pearl throughout the state, but overall Pearl definitely edged out that second Lone Star in overall production and sales. But it was fairly intense.
Well, I mean, Pearl was more of a classic Pilsner?
Yeah, it was a light lager. Lone Star was as well. Just two slightly different recipes.
Right. How many jobs, how big of an economic impact did having these breweries mean for San Antonio? And what do they do for the San Antonio, just having it as a marketing San Antonio, as promoting the city?
I did. Just to give you an idea, just before Prohibition started in San Antonio, Pearl, which at that time was San Antonio Brewing Association, along with quite a few other small little breweries. We're talking, you know, one or two man operations, including the Charles Deegan Brewery, comprised almost 40% of the city's entire payroll. So it was at that point really huge. And although things certainly tapered off after Prohibition, leaving just the San Antonio Brewing Association when things reopened in 1933, once the second Lone Star, starting out as the Sabinas Brewery in Mexico, moved up in 1933, and then they were here, and then they changed their name to Lone Star in 1940 after acquiring the expired copyright from the Adolphus Busch Brewery. We started seeing one or two small ones open up as well, but it was pretty much just the two of them for the longest time. But they were both looked at as gathering places, their tap rooms, especially the second Lone Star with their famous lake and swimming pool, having water shows, having Boy Scouts out to do fishing competitions, and really turning it into what many looked like a country club. And Pearl, not quite on that scale for the aesthetics, you know, had a lot of nice things for their tap room and people visiting. They had a nice bar and tap room area in addition to Lone Star, who at one point moved the famous Buckhorn Olive Horn Saloon to their property to act as their tap room. So gathering places for the community was really kind of that common factor.
I have clear, fond memories as a child being brought to those destinations, the Pearl, and going into their tap room and getting a root beer, and then also going to Lone Star on Mission Road and seeing the Buckhorn Hall of Horns and everything that they had out there. I mean, these were tourist destinations, and they were they certainly left an impression.
Absolutely. Pearl's tap room, what they had done at one point is the famous Pearl Stables, which is now a concert venue, and they've done a great job on the inside of that. At one point, Pearl turned it into their tap room slash bar for visitors, much like Lone Star with the Buckhorn. And because Judge Roy Bean was a very big fan of Pearl beer and only carried Pearl beer at his famous courthouse slash bar, Pearl named their bar the Jersey Lily after Judge Roy Bean's lady.
And Lyndon Johnson was also a big fan of Pearl beer.
Yes, he was. And somewhat unintentionally involved in the second Lone Star.
How's that?
Yeah, no, he, well, a gentleman named Harry Jersick, who was in with the second Lone Star at the very beginning when it was Sabinas and then Champion Brewing for a year. As they're changing ownership and rebranding as Lone Star, a gentleman named Harry Jersick was a part of that, a little bit of the ownership, but really in charge of sales and advertising at that point when he was a kid. Lyndon Johnson paid him to, or no, I'm sorry, let me get that straight. He paid young Lyndon Johnson to help him do deliveries around the High Texas, Johnson City area. So there was a connection between Harry Jersick and Lone Star with a very young LBJ at that point.
So Lone Star had this famous relationship with folks like Willie Nelson, Jerry Jeff Walker, Bob Wills. So was that authentic, or was that, did that happen on its own, or was that something that was manufactured as marketing?
I think a little bit of both. Jerry Retzloff, again, who is in charge of some sales and advertising for the Central Texas area, and the overall sales advertising manager, Barry Sullivan, wanted to do was take advantage of a younger crowd. Lone Star had been coming off of a campaign the previous 10 years or so called In the Big Country, and kind of marketed as you know, your dad or your grandfather's beer, trying to get those cowboys and ranchers really into it. But Jerry Retzloff saw a opportunity with the younger generation and younger demographic in Austin, and saw these bars like the world famous World Armadillo headquarters, Armadillo World headquarters in Austin, and these bands come into play there, and noticed that everybody was, you know, grabbing a lone, you know, what became a Lone Star long neck, and drinking these, and said, you know, what if we tie that into Texas? This is becoming this cosmic country, outlaw country is becoming more and more what people living in, younger and living in Texas, and those traveling to Texas are envisioning Texas is. They gave Willie Nelson and a lot of those bands, Gary P. Nunn and them, free Lone Star for their tour buses while they're playing. And that kind of self-advertised Lone Star without the musicians looking like they've sold out.
They had the giant armadillo advertising campaign. That seems to be memorable. So talk about that.
Yeah, quite a bit. And that was one funny little story. There was an artist in Austin who was Jim Franklin. He's still with us, but he was one of the folks involved with Armadillo World Headquarters. He was drawing these paintings and photos and so forth of armadillos for various businesses for advertisements. And Jerry Retzloff came upon some of those and thought that was brilliant, that that was, you know, an animal associated with Texas, but it was kind of avant-garde, not common to see something like that in advertising. And working with Jim Franklin got him to do a whole bunch of those Lone Star posters with the armadillos in them. A famous one is Schooner in a Bottle, and it shows a stagecoach going through a Lone Star long neck. Those became synonymous. So Lone Star built upon that, putting the armadillo in everything. But that kind of died out in the early, mid-80s.
So if I go down to Ice House and I buy a Lone Star beer today, where was that beer brewed?
That is brewed right now in Houston, Texas, by the Anheuser-Busch brewery there.
Okay, so it is Texas. It is brewed in Texas. Okay.
It's still brewed in Texas.
And so how does that beer maintain its authenticity, San Antonio feeling, when it is brewed, I guess, in Houston, in a large manufacturing facility? Is that authenticity gone? Is the mythology more important than where the beer is made?
I think that at this point, the mythology is definitely overshadowed where it's made. It was brewed outside of San Antonio after the brewery closed in 96, but still in Texas, and it moves to Fort Worth, still Texas, and then again Houston. So all still Texas, and even though San Antonio originated that, it has kept that Texas authenticity, which is what the brewery was advertising from the beginning in the early 70s.
Jeffrey Banas has a new book, tells the story of Lone Star Beer. Lone Star Beer, a history of two iconic San Antonio breweries. He is a longtime beer writer, historian. Previous books include the history of Pearl Beer, San Antonio Brewing, Celis Beer. Jeremy Banas, thank you for coming on, telling us about Lone Star.
Thanks, David. Appreciate you having me on.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.